Should we start?
Yeah.
All right. Welcome back.
How many pod?
How many podcasts?
Episode.
God knows. 17?
We can't even say, but we don't know what order we're releasing things in. So we can't say for sure which episode this is.
Maybe. I think I know the order we're releasing things in, and I think this is 17.
Craig was 15.
Yeah. And then we have one more, and now Mark.
Who's after Craig?
Okay, this is not exciting. Intro.
If I have any say, I'd rather be 17 than 16.
Okay. There you go, perfect.
Episode 17.
Mark Goodwin joining us.
Mark Goodwin joining us.
Friend of the pod.
Friend of the pod, yep.
I feel like we've mentioned Mark several times on the podcast already. Yeah.
He's a Bay Area Bitcoiner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like in our circle of Bay Area Bitcoiners.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love my Bay Area Bitcoiners.
Yeah.
And they keep giving me shit because I keep doing stuff and not saying how much I love them.
Yeah, so there's going to be a lot of Bay Area Bitcoiner shilling on today.
I mean, that's like really the theme of this podcast is Bay Area Bitcoiner shilling.
Yeah, 100%. And Bitcoin community shilling.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, get yourself a community, you know.
Yeah.
Find people IRL. Mm-hmm. Hang out, you know.
Yeah.
No, true.
Start podcasts, you know, then invite them on, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
I got my job through Bay Area Bitcoiners. Like, all of the people that I talk to pretty much every day were in some way. Like, probably my best friends in the Bay at this point, pretty much.
Yeah. I know. I'm the same way. Yeah. And it's been, like, 4 months. That was my existential crisis at BitBlock Boom. I was like, my life has changed so much in the last couple months. Like, I don't know how to process this.
Yeah.
But it's all good. It's all good stuff. It's just, you know,
it's
the magic
lot.
Comes in. Yeah. It's a lot.
Yeah, Bitcoin's a hell of a drug.
It really is.
Yeah, just a good community of people and, yeah.
Yeah. So Mark's joining us after, you know, a long time of figuring out what he's going to come on and talk about.
Yep.
And we're going to talk about the merge.
That's a big topic.
We're going to not do a Bitcoin topic.
No, it's the merge.
We're
going to
talk about the fucking Ethereum merge.
Maybe had a reputation of never talking about Bitcoin.
I know. Well, that's why I wasn't sure if you would want to talk about the merge since you're
but
you're the merge guy now.
Oh, God. I think if anything, I would like to say that I was trying to spearhead the narrative of thinking about the dollar and Bitcoin a long time ago.
Hmm.
And so I'll take that, like, Bitcoin dollar guy angle.
What do you mean? What's that shtick?
Just like everyone was like, the dollar's going to zero and blah. It's like, no, the dollar's going to rip. And it did. I mean, it's been going like straight up for like a year. And it was like, it's going to destroy every other currency and do really well. Before Bitcoin and the dollar has its fight, it's like the dollar's going to kill everything else first.
Yeah.
So
that's interesting.
Why do you think
that,
why do you think the dollar is killing it? Why do you think the dollar is going to kill everything else?
I mean, it's the reserve currency. It's like the one that people seem to want everywhere else. It's like the most trusted, and you know, the US has always paid its debt with it somehow. And again, of course, anything could happen, but I mean, more or less, I like the first article I ever wrote was you know, sort of like a take on.
Did you even mention that you're an editor of Bitcoin Magazine?
Oh, yeah. Editor of Bitcoin Magazine. This is our third Bitcoin Magazine guest.
Like the head editor of the print edition or like official.
I should
grab a copy of Bitcoin Magazine.
Yeah.
Just, you know, show it off.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
I love the magazine. This is the first I actually subscribed because I was like, got to support my friends, you know? I love this magazine. Like, it's on nice, thick paper. It feels a lot like an art magazine. Like, it just feels like cool. It's just very cool. I wasn't expecting this from Bitcoin Magazine. Honestly, I wasn't. I was expecting like sort of like more of like a glossy pictures of Michael Saylor kind of feel to it. Yeah, but no, it's cool. It's got cool art and like weird ass, like random like pictures and shit. Like, yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
We love to shell Bitcoin Magazine.
Yeah. I mean,
we're lucky that there's a magazine about Bitcoin and it isn't like glossy Michael Saylor pictures, right?
I mean, you know, and I think, you know, the there's a Joe Rogers and Annabelle and John Wu and myself are kind of like the core print team. And so Joe GMs, AB does all the design work. She's a genius. And then John Wu's an incredible photographer and photo editor. And then I actually do the editorial.
Right. Uh-huh.
So I don't know what my actual like technical title is. Yeah. It's like been
it was
one
cool.
of these.
You didn't have this job when we met and you were like, maybe going to do something with Bitcoin Magazine.
Yeah.
And then you got it. And now you're like,
No. Yeah. Really, like, it happened like so slowly and naturally in a really nice way where just like I just had like an overwhelming thing where I was like, I just need to write this and just get it out. And yeah. I like wrote the Bitcoin dollar thing, like kind of mm-hmm. like one sitting and just pooped out this like 4,000 or just like get it out of here. Mm-hmm. And then just like kind of sent it in like kind of nonchalantly and was like, I'm going to go to a Bay Area meetup and like, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, mm-hmm. and then, yeah, like CK was just like, damn, this is sick. Like, great. Sent mm-hmm. it to Austin. He was like, this is great. And, you know, they posted it and asked me to write more, like brought me on, did a podcast and the spaces. And they were just like, they did a really good job. I mean, because the contributor network is kind of like everything. It's mm-hmm. like we run off of that 100%. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's kind of what Bitcoin Magazine is supposed to be as a platform for contributors. And mm-hmm. so I was a contributor, but they did like such a good job of kind of like being like, oh, like he's going to care about this and take this seriously. And we want more of his stuff. And, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just cool. They like made it so available to me and then, you know, asked me if I wanted to write for him mm-hmm. full time. And then, yeah, it's kind of happened. So
awesome.
Yeah. I'm so thankful for them. It's been a lot of fun.
Do you have any crazy plans for the future of Bitcoin Magazine?
Oh yeah.
That you can reveal for sure. on the pod?
when is this coming
Bitcoin
out?
Magazine Alpha Leak?
When is this coming out?
Right. Ethereum merge time.
Right. Yeah. Right.
The 15th.
Around yeah.
It's like right around we're gonna be announcing some stuff around then. I can say that the and this hasn't been announced really, but the next mag will be political themed.
Okay,
love that.
In fact, it is going to be called the Orange Party Issue. Mm. I won't tell you who's on the cover, but there's some ridiculous op-eds in there, including some that I had to be under NDA for, and shit's gonna get real.
Nice.
Hell yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
I love to hear it. So, before you...
And I'm not suicidal at all.
I haven't thought about killing myself.
Not in years.
So what was your... I'm curious what your timeline was in like becoming a Bitcoiner. Like, were you like an online Twitter guy and then you were like, okay, I need to say all this and like how did this
I should let you ask the question.
No, sorry. You already know where I'm going.
I actually created a Twitter like somewhat. I mean, my Twitter's like barely even like a year old, I think.
Really?
Maybe like two, maybe.
Wow.
I kind of created a Twitter because I was like, oh, like Bitcoiners aren't anywhere else but Twitter anymore. Mm-hmm. So I kind of have to be on Twitter. I kind of came up through like Bitcoin markets on Reddit. There was a big online community, but...
Reddit kind of used to be pretty good.
Yeah, I mean...
And it just kind of started sucking, and I just realized I was never checking it anymore.
It turned into... I mean, Reddit... I mean, you know, how deep do we want to get right away? I mean...
Go ahead.
I mean, Reddit was, like, owned by the Maxwell family, mm-hmm. and there's an extremely good chance that, like, the head moderator on all of these like huge boards was Ghislaine Maxwell.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah,
like our politics, our news, all this stuff. Yeah. And like, I would say the evidence is so convincing that I absolutely think it's true. And I know that's like a crazy thing to say, and I'm sorry.
That's what we're here for, really. Yeah. the absolutely insane.
Just to people air their most like insane bullshit.
It was the number one upvoted person on Reddit.
Really?
And they have not... Like, all of a sudden, like, it was literally the day that she was arrested, or the day she was arrested was the last day that this person posted, and they have never posted since.
What was, like, what
Maxwell
was
Hill.
What was her game?
Maxwell Hill.
Like, what was she trying to, like...
I mean, her father is, like, was a super famous, media mogul. Like, he owned the Mirror, and then ended up buying Condé Nast, and that's how they ended up with Reddit. But, like, there's a lot of, like, Reddit CEOs and like, you know, former C-level execs that have been like, yeah, like, Ghislaine Maxwell was, like, at our, like, holiday parties and stuff.
But, like, what was she trying to do? Did she,
influence the discussion.
In what direction?
In any direction that they wanted it.
But, I mean, what would benefit her?
I feel like they were more like mercenaries. Like they were more like for hire. Like it's like what narrative needed to be like seeded at what time and what people needed to come together to like make that narrative happen. Mm-hmm. Like that's, I think it's not that I don't get the impression that it was like that they had this like specific vision. Mm-hmm. It's that like they were sort of like the operating people that were doing the dirty work.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, Reddit is sort of I think it's losing its power a little bit, but it is sort of like where you go and discuss and react.
It's where a lot of people get their news.
I think the way people respond to stuff immediately, it really influences the way that you take the headlines. So, I mean, literally this moderator would like repost, like, you know, would delete things other people posted and whatever, redo them and have it like, would delete comments that didn't go against the narrative and like set it very, the narrative very, very importantly, like in that kind of goopy stage when things were kind of breaking, which is like kind of how you sort of control public, you know, sort of reception.
Oh, 100%.
News, you know?
Yeah.
So. I just wonder, like, was she like, oh, like Jeffrey Epstein should definitely be allowed to fuck like 14-year-old girls. Really?
I mean, they were talking about like, yeah, like age of consent laws being.
Oh, really?
Yeah, of course. But then, like, there was like the last post that she ever made was about like a $1 billion Bitcoin transaction going through. And people heavily associate that they were using Bitcoin as part of their scheme of
for
sorts.
Friends and enemies.
As a way, I actually think, as like a way to message and send like, you know, payments for like videos and weird things like that. But anyway, yeah, who knows about all that shit.
Okay, so you were on Reddit.
Very on Reddit.
So how did I get into
Reddit.
Bitcoin? Yeah. Well, actually, so the way I got into Bitcoin, strangely enough, in like 2014, this guy who was a regular at my bar had just bought a Tesla, and he was like, oh, I bought it with Bitcoin, with like Bitcoins. A bunch of them, and that was like well before that was really like a thing, and Teslas were like cool, and I had never seen one, and I was like, holy shit. And so I went in his Tesla and I like, kind of drove it around, and he sort of like you know, told me like the littlest bit about it. And then like a few weeks later he ended up getting arrested, and he was the guy that had put up Silk Road 2 after Ross had gone down. Scott Blake, very, very nice guy. I mean, I haven't talked to him in years, obviously, but so he was kind of the guy that broke the Bitcoin news to me. Obviously, he like didn't tell me he was like using it for Silk Road or any of that stuff or whatnot. And then, so that was kind of my first exposure to it. And then I helped some friends buy some ketamine on the Silk Road.
Cool.
And yeah, dropping like 50 Bitcoin on ketamine or something. And then didn't touch Bitcoin again until like, you know, the beginning of 2017, pretty much.
What was, well, when were you buying ketamine off the, off the Silk Road for like 50 Bitcoin?
I mean, around that same time, it was like probably a couple months after that.
What year?
Are you trying to narc? What are you
doing? No, like, I want to.
When?
I want to figure out what the price of Bitcoin like was. Like, was it like $10 Bitcoin or like $100?
No, I think it was like $50. I think.
Yeah.
I'm honest, and I honestly don't even remember if it was Silk Road or not. Uh-huh. Like it was like a very.
If it
long
was
time
back
ago.
Then, I think it was the Silk Road.
But
green,
I feel like
green theme.
But think,
theme
but
the
thinking
site.
About what I just said, I'm almost certain it wasn't because it was shut down.
Yeah, Silk Road was shut down after that price point.
Because Dream, I think, is that sounds more familiar.
I think Silk Road was shut down between like $100 Bitcoin and like $1,000 Bitcoin, somewhere in there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe there was another version, right? Mm. Okay, interesting.
No, I think maybe you were using the Silk Road before. If the price was 50 Bitcoin, that was a long time ago.
Okay.
$50 a Bitcoin.
Yeah. I'm not 100% sure. I was living in like a big art warehouse space in San Francisco, and my buddy was doing, he was doing a bunch of crazy shit, but he was just like, hey, you're kind of blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, I've heard of that. And he just like, yeah, he like bought it off Coinbase. And like, I just kind of like was at the computer with him. Like, I didn't really like know what I was doing.
So you had some level of interaction with it before like becoming a Bitcoiner.
Just like, yeah, I mean, in a, yeah, but I didn't
like
think about it. I didn't like really even process it clearly. But just enough. The only reason why I bring it up because A, it's like Bay Area. It's crazy. Like the exposure to things, you're just around it.
Yeah.
But also it's like, you're going to run into Bitcoin so many times before you get it. And it was like years of like, and I actually saw the utility of it in a very direct way. I just
before
never
you,
thought
yeah.
about it as, I didn't even, when it was explained to me, I didn't understand it as a store of value at all. I was like, oh, you can use it to buy a Tesla and avoid everything and no one, blah, blah, blah. Like, cool. Oh, you can use it to buy drugs. Great. You don't need to go. I didn't think about it. And I don't think a lot of people did necessarily, but I never thought about it at all as like an investment tool. I was just like, oh, you can just take, instead of using a debit card, like you can just take your money and like send it like that. I didn't think about it as a, you know, a 21 million.
Right.
I didn't even know there was a supply cap.
Disruptor.
I didn't know anything about it. I thought it was just like the same as a, like I probably didn't even know there was a supply cap until 2017, you know, and maybe that's a fault of who explained it to me or whatever, but I it literally just thought of it as a medium of exchange.
Right.
and probably didn't even know what that phrase meant then.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then through, you know, around, yeah, 2017, you know, around probably like, I probably started buying aboutish when it went to over 1,000, but not like barely any, not enough. And then kind of bought all the way up. And I think I literally have a receipt. I think I was the top of the US market.
Uh-huh.
I have a Coinbase receipt that's like 19785 or something.
Nice.
In December 2017. And then I spent 2018 like being like, what did I just do? And that was my favorite year of Bitcoin. I just like learned, because it's just like so fun when you don't know any, like, you know, and every day you learn like a fundamental pillar and you're just like, oh my God, like the difficulty adjustment, like holy shit.
It's so elegant.
Oh my God. And like, I mean, this, I'm having a great time. This bear, like, this has been really fun.
That's kind of what we're in right now.
This bear. How you doing, this bear?
Yeah,
it's a good bear for you. It's a pretty okay bear for me.
Building in this bear market, okay.
I mean, I'm enjoying the like existential crisis of the Bitcoin space right now. I
feel like there is no existential crisis. Yeah, what do you? I feel like everybody's like, ah, whatever.
What existential crisis are you perceiving?
Well, just like, I think there's a lot of humility coming out, which is like kind of nice. And I think we've been, the last 2 years were like the opposite of that, where it was just like, we all made the best decision ever and we're geniuses and we're all fucking rich. And this, and then it's like, oh wait, wow. Like, no, like there's still the state, still, you know, regulations, there's all this shit. The dollar still exists.
Yeah.
And
that's going to be more and more like, I mean, like Bitcoin, the things we want it to do are not just have the price go up.
Right.
We want like Bitcoin to do these hard, difficult things to make things better. And we're Bitcoin. So we've got to do those hard, difficult, messy things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 1,000%. So I like that. I wouldn't say like, I don't know, not like an existential crisis. Like I'm worried about it.
Yeah, I would say
anything,
crypto is having
like
an existential crisis.
Well,
like,
that makes more sense.
I definitely see like in like the crypto space, like things falling apart and people being like, oh, what did we do? Like maybe, you know, being like, oh, Bitcoin, like what, 100% gains, not enough for me. Like, that sort of mentality is like doesn't really work.
Right.
You know, I definitely can see in crypto there's like a move more toward, I don't know if it's towards Bitcoin, but like a, like reflecting and like looking back. We're actually going, Casey and I are going to this like blockchain event tomorrow because I like to bear witness. I like to like go and and just see the scene and see how people are doing.
Yeah. I wrote a proof of stake white paper.
Oh yeah? Which can you tell us which one?
What do you mean?
Like which white paper was it?
I mean, one I wrote for like a project I was doing on a Tezos thing.
Okay, sick.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't say it's sick.
Get out there.
I wrote a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah.
That's what I wrote.
Yeah.
Looking back on it, it's very embarrassing. But at the time, it was, I mean, very like, I mean, my intentions were pure. Like, I didn't realize I was literally writing a Ponzi scheme.
This is what I'm curious to see. This is why I want to go to this blockchain meetup, is because I want to see, like, I went to this meetup, like, I don't think it was during the bull run, but it was sort of at the tail end, like kind of dipping a little bit. Maybe
you're
like,
talking about the NFT one.
No. You haven't gone to the blockchain ones yet that I was going to.
No.
But I was like, that those meetups like sort of made me be like, oh, I think crypto sucks, and it's actually Bitcoin that's the thing. But like at the time that I went to like a couple of those, it was like Bitcoin is probably like 50K. Like it was like, I feel like it had kind of started to dip down.
Yeah.
And at that time, like there were people coming in, like being like giving talks about like Avalanche and like how gaming is all, and like we're going to like save all these gamers from the Philippines that are going to like, you know, game themselves into generational wealth, all this sort of thing. And I'm really curious to go back to that meetup now and like see like who's there.
Yeah.
What do people think? Like, yeah, I'm always curious about crypto bro psychology, which we're going to talk about with the merge, because I want to know what the ETH bros think about the merge.
And the other thing is that meetup is at UC Berkeley.
Oh,
and
cool.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say
I'm like
person's relationship here, but I went to UC Berkeley. UC Berkeley grad. And as far as I can tell, they've just descended into shitcoinery.
Right. 100%.
The only meetup on campus is the Blockchain at Berkeley meetup. I actually, in 2017, I gave a presentation for them to their members on the block size wars, the super long presentation. Yeah. And it was really well attended, and that they were doing.
Do you have any
like,
recordings of it?
Yeah, I think there's a recording online. It's pretty bad, but and I also have the like the slides I gave that are actually really in depth, like the timeline and everything. Yeah.
I would love to check that out, because I have a fear that we have replaced the actual history of the block size war with the book, The Block Size right. War. And yeah. that's like,
yeah.
that, like, we have to,
yeah.
it's a Bitcoiner thing where it's just yeah. like, we have to realize that's bad. You can't have a single source.
Yeah, sure.
Like, none of you
yeah.
remember the block size war. None of you were in right. Bitcoin that were in yeah. the block size war.
Yeah.
This isn't the yeah. only, well, so I would be curious.
That video is good. It happened right before the Bcash fork. Yeah.
yeah.
And so it was like, you can hear what I think at the time yeah. was going right. to happen. Yeah.
So curious.
A primary source.
Stupidly deleted. I had on Bitcoin markets, I had every single one of my trades and everything. Uh-huh. I had written everything out, why I was doing everything. I had everything marked.
Oh, yeah.
I was, I had like a subtitle in the group where like I was called like the goat fucker. Uh-huh. I was like the goat, like I was like crushing it.
Because you're yeah. fucking goats.
There was a joke about, I made some joke and something, but it, I know GOAT. Uh-huh. And then I was just like, wait, that's the dumbest fucking idea of all time.
Uh-huh.
I think Reddit's comped. What am I doing?
Yeah.
So I like, you know, got an extension that like nukes right. all your posts.
Oh, man. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That shit. Which
yeah.
like now I'm kind of like, I wish I could have saved it like offline in some way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just because I would love to see
what, yeah, what I was thinking at the time, for sure.
But I like remember when like yeah. GDAX listed like, you know, yeah. Bcash and like it exploded up to like fucking like a quarter of a coin. It was like right. ridiculous. Yeah. And like I had a couple other Bitcoin buddies like that I worked with at bars and whatever, or like, you know, people I was trying to get into
mm-hmm.
that were like all about it and yeah. they like made a bunch of money on
yeah.
it. And
yeah,
all
yeah,
this.
Yeah,
and yeah. Yeah, it's crazy.
The other thing about this meetup is that the people who are presenting is Reserve. And Reserve mm-hmm. is a...
Sorry,
well, so Reserve is like some stablecoin company.
Mm-hmm.
And Reserve was spun out of something called Leverage Research.
Hmm.
And Leverage Research is like... So there's the rationalists, the rationalist community, which is sort of like this like group of people who follow this blog. And Leverage Research was a cult that attracted rationalists and convinced them that they had demons in their brain that they needed to debug using these like weird...
They had like straight up like Scientology yeah. style, like alternative like therapy methods where they called debugging yourself.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. And a whole bunch of super smart Bay Area people got into this and... Some of them have written some things online that are like, this fucked me up.
Exposés.
Like, exposés, yeah. There's a couple exposés. Maybe there's three total exposés. I think you saw two of them.
Mm-hmm. The debugging fucked them up.
The culture. Yeah. The insane, intense culture.
It was a cult of personality around like the main guy. Like,
okay. Jeff.
Like people were like, you're so lucky to live in the same time as him. Like he's the greatest thinker of all time. And like he's going to change
his like philosophical truths. He like really understands the science of philosophy, which is like, the most important science, period.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of shit. So this shitcoin came out of that.
So this shitcoin Reserve spun out of Leverage Research. And as far as I can tell, it's just some dumb ass like stablecoin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to go meet that guy.
We're going to go meet.
We're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to do some reportage.
Wow. Yeah, that's super interesting. Wow.
Yeah. So we're, you know, we're having fun.
But were they like doing like binaural like was it like a sound debugging?
No. They would have these like super intense like talk therapy sessions with other people in the organization. And they would be like, you know, why do you think this? And like, you're not contributing to the organization.
Yeah,
enough.
You
like,
need to debug.
You need
like
to debug.
Your feelings around this thing. You're thinking about this the wrong way. You need to debug.
Yeah.
Like that kind of
and
stuff.
The debugging session would be these like grueling, like almost like confrontational, like one-on-one like therapy sessions. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So yeah, just like classic cult behavior.
Classic
cult. What do you think about cults? Are you like anti-cult? Are you cult neutral? Like
cult curious?
Cult curious.
Definitely cult curious. For
yeah,
sure.
Who isn't?
From an outside.
Everyone is.
You sound like you have a little agenda here.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering.
Yeah, what did I just get myself into?
No, well, I just
ordinals, man.
Yeah. Welcome to the Ordinals Corporation.
Yeah, I'm definitely a member of the Ordinal cult for sure.
Yeah.
Ordinal cult's cool. It's a cool phrase. I think I am into them in the sense that I like radical ideas of organization socially, mm-hmm. which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the Messiah thing.
Obviously. Yeah, I don't like cult of
and the
personality
grooming thing
kind of
is
yeah.
fucked up. Like that to me, debugging is like they're like grooming you to like
right.
be out, and I think that's fucked up.
Right.
But like
community.
Yeah, like I lived in a ridiculous, like big open warehouse that like
where
you
was
know,
it?
I was the third and is it Burke, I think?
Okay.
Yeah. So you know how it's like on a it's like an alphabet. It's a numbered to 26. Yep. Then it's Army, And then a ghost of brokers the beat.
Gotcha.
So it's in like a little warehouse space over there off of 3rd Street in the Dog Patch. But like, yeah, like it was a Burning Man flop house pretty much. Like I would like wake up and there would be like people like having like a ketamine party that I've never met before, like in my kitchen. And like our shower was just like an open thing. Like it would be like as if there was just like a shower like right where that couch is. And it was just in the, like it was just a very open communal. There was like a hanging crazy like fur lined like bumblebee from the ceiling that like, you could go into and people would like bang in there. It's kind of weird. It was just weird and I loved it because it was very communal and you know, whatever. It wasn't super culty, but I like that kind of stuff. I love like, yeah, experimental living. Like I really want to have a, either like a school or like a farm that's just like an event space or like a, more of like a, even an event, but like, like, I want to be able to, you know, my, all my friends that are, like, genius art people or musicians or whatever, I want to be like, hey, go spend artist 3 months. Go, that's the phrase I mean, you know. I don't want to be a cult leader at all. In fact, I don't want anything to do with that. I don't even want to be associated in, other than just, like you go take it and do it. You go, you know. And I've given my studio out to some people before and stuff like that. That's the shit. That stuff is really cool. Radical community. But, like, cult, no.
Yeah, I just think there's like a fine, I don't know, I feel like the like radical community or like big ideas, like, I mean, Bitcoin, honestly, the community around Bitcoin is kind of culty, you know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
But I think like the line between like, I feel like there's a lot of people who are like, I don't know, they shit on cults because they're jealous they don't believe in anything and they don't have anyone in their lives, you know?
Like, well, I think it's very similar to like sort of new atheists who are super anti-religion.
Yeah.
And part of the reason they're anti-religion is that they're bitter because they like fear death like everybody else because they don't have something that makes them feel a little bit better about
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Maybe if they found Jesus, they would sleep a little bit better at night.
Exactly.
So they just have to shit on everybody who...
Maybe there's something quintessentially human about like wanting to believe in something or like wanting to be with your tribe and like that of kind of thing. And
absolutely.
I don't know, you can hate yourself for being human or you can just sort of...
The one interesting thing about the Leverage Research like rationalist cult was it was like really smart people. It was like people like Bay Area, like intelligent.
Well, they're rational. They're supposed to be thinking rationally, which is like supposed to not be culty.
Yeah, but it, but the reason, like, I think why that happened is because I think that social pressure and social like forces override everything else.
100%.
That you can be super smart, and if you're in a community that like all believe somebody something, like either you will, some people will just leave that community, but a lot of people will stay and start believing and acting in the way that the community believes and acts, and it's just like a override in our brains what other people want us to do or what they think.
Yeah, I agree with you. I also think like I'm not a huge fan of rational thinking.
I like rationalists way more than I like rational thinking.
Yeah,
rationalists are great. I just like them because they're like smart and open-minded and weird and that not for any particular part of the rationalist belief system, although being right is good. I like
being, I love being right. Well, we just always are.
Yeah.
You know? Just a natural state.
Yeah,
so we're going to go, you know, we're going to go talk to this cult guy and just see what we find out.
I want to know, I'm deciding if I should ask a really pointed question
you
from
should.
The audience. Like, can you describe your relationship with well-known rationalist cult Leverage Research?
I mean, you probably didn't even need to say cult if you don't want it, but I would bring it up. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
I mean...
Are you trying to recruit UC Berkeley undergrads to your cult, you know?
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah,
I mean,
that'd be the real...
Is he? Like, that's what I want to know.
I kind of think that maybe the relationship is not that strong. That, like, they just, like, Leverage Research, like, just spun out this, like, shit coin. And then it maybe doesn't even have any connection to the cult anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I remember seeing Reserve, like, a lot. Like, I think it had a pretty big... following for a bit, didn't it? Like, I remember it kind of being like on Biz a bunch or something. Like, it's definitely like I think I can almost picture the logo.
They definitely like they branded themselves in this very like, you know, a stable coin is like a human right, and we're like bringing the stable coin and very like new Memphis like kind of branding. And
Yes.
Should we talk about stable coins?
Yeah, stable coins.
Since we're on the topic.
Let's talk about stable coins.
The Binance thing is really interesting.
Yeah.
So you said that, I don't know, I didn't hear the news, so you'll have to...
Yeah, break the news.
Basically, they just like dropped a blog post today that was just like, hey, by the way, you know, on, I think it's the 23rd. There's a couple like dates of when things were going to happen. It's either the 23rd or the 26th, but they're going to like liquidate all USDC on Binance and replace it with BUSD, which is like the Binance stable coin.
Give me that bussy.
I mean, who wouldn't want to do that as an exchange? You know, it's of course they're going to do that. Yeah. It's like ridiculous. But, and then they're also, so one of the dates is when they do that. And then the other date is they're also closing all USDC denominated loans and open positions on Binance, which I would suspect is probably the reason why they're doing this. Like, I think that's like, I would be very curious what they're like. Open leverage position versus their like USDC balances, you know, like I would be, because there's obviously, I think, a reason why they're doing this. It could either be a bad financial position. They got stuck in something. And I think a lot of people got stuck in bad financial positions. We're seeing, you know, hash price going down and leverage kind of screwing over a lot of people.
So the move is just to close a bunch of positions.
I mean, that, it could be that.
That's theory.
It could be that the regulation's coming and the USDC world.
They're worried about, that other stablecoins are going to get regulated. And like, I think that maybe actually what it has to do with is everybody would like to issue a stablecoin.
Of course.
Everybody is just an excuse to just like print money. And if even if it's fully reserved, you can like invest the reserve or like whatever. Totally. And so I think it's interesting. I think Bitcoin is kind of not like stablecoins. Like you don't get any benefit from issuing a different Bitcoin, right? If it's really like a fair mined, no pre-launch coin, you don't get any benefit. So nobody really tries to compete with Bitcoin to like what? Get all of the no money.
Another synthesized asset,
Yeah, exactly. To get the like the zero pre-mine, right?
Right.
Whereas with stablecoins, everybody is gonna compete. Everybody wants to issue stablecoins.
1000%.
And so I think people maybe had this model that like, oh, Tether or like one particular stablecoin would win. But I actually think that's not the case. It's gonna be totally fragmented. They're all gonna be tied to the nominal dollar unit. But I think infighting among stablecoins will keep them from anyone from getting too big. And maybe this is an example
it's
of that.
I tweeted, God, I can't believe I just said that, but it's true. I tweeted out, I'm going to reference my own tweet.
That's fine.
Begun the stablecoin wars have. And that was my reaction to it. Because I completely agree. It's like, it's free money.
Right.
It's literally free money. Yeah. Binance Smart Chain, Binance, they have so much bullshit. User liquidity and all this stuff.
Yeah,
like they're leaving billions of dollars, probably, maybe hundreds of millions, maybe tens of millions of dollars on the table by not making their own stablecoin.
Right,
and probably closer to billions. It's insane. It's the stablecoin game is gonna be really fun. But I think the important part of what you just said is the nominal dollar thing.
Yeah,
because it like. This is a thing that I think people have really misunderstood about stablecoins from the get-go. It's like everyone has always been like, oh, the U.S. government is going to like fuck Tether up. And like, you know, the U.S. government hates stablecoins and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no.
Yeah.
Like they love stablecoins.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They love them.
Yeah, they like it. They perpetuate the dollar brand. They give people access to dollars who wouldn't normally have access to dollars.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
The stablecoin has taken the dollar from being mostly just US and, you know, and then people that can afford, you know, it's made the dollar actually a unit that can be used by individuals in other countries. It's like, it's extended the scope of the dollar so much.
I mean, the dollar was always in other countries, but in the form of cash.
Totally.
Right? Which was
like, and it was limited. Reserved to a very few amount of people that could get access to it.
Not necessarily. There's some places where, like, because of serious problems with their own currency, cash, US dollar cash become very widely spread. But not as widely spread as people would have liked.
Right.
It's weird. The U.S. has this like schizophrenic like split brain.
Yes.
Because on the one hand, of course they want everybody to get access to dollars. Right. On the other hand, they want to use it as a tool for sanctions.
Exactly.
And those two things are actually in conflict, right?
Yes.
And I think it would probably benefit the U.S. more if they were like, all right, everybody uses the dollar. And that means that it's no longer a tool for sanctions because everybody can get access to the dollar. Right, I think that would probably benefit the U.S. more, and probably pursuing like trying to use it as sanctions and preventing it from spreading widely is the U.S. like just cucking itself super hard.
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, being their world reserve currency is like such a good thing and such a bad thing at the same time.
Oh right, yeah. Not talking about I mean, that's the curse of having a reserve currency is that if you have a reserve currency, everybody demands it.
Yep.
And then your incentive is just to print more of it and not actually do any stuff.
Yep.
Instead of making like, you know, machine parts and like milling machines and shit, we just print dollars now.
Totally.
Our country's been hollowed out and fucked into oblivion by the financialization of the market since the 1940s exports, Japan and Germany, you know.
It's true.
True though.
Yeah.
I'm curious. Okay.
You really want to be on video for that one.
I think. Yeah. Yeah, you really do. Mark, like, what's your, can you give me your like US dollar take slash like future predictions?
Yeah, sure. I mean, basically, I think that the, well, I'll go one step further back. I think it's very likely or at least possible that a lot of the digital currency space has come out of governments, especially the US government, especially mm-hmm. Bitcoin.
Oh yeah, you're like a Bitcoin came out of Langley kind of guy, right?
No comment. I think I will say this. It doesn't matter who the fuck made Bitcoin, and that's just true.
Yeah.
So who cares? But I do think that there is absolutely a thought theory that the Bitcoin will be very good for the US dollar system. And I would argue that we are witnessing it and we are seeing it. And that's what I said a year ago, very publicly. And so recreating the petrodollar system with Bitcoin, which is a much better energy based money that's demanded than the petrol system because of the supply cap, right?
Wait, okay. They're recreating the petrodollar with Bitcoin as the petro.
Right. So, exactly. So, the Bitcoin dollar.
Bitcoin is the petro or Bitcoin is the dollar?
It's the petrol.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Spicy. That's what, yeah, that's, I'm so clarifying.
Yeah. So, we created the petrodollar system like in the 70s.
Wild. This is great.
we created the petrodollar system in the 70s. You know, we made a, you know, handshake agreement or whatever with like Saudi Arabia. And we were like, hey, like you're going to only sell petrol in dollars. And we're going to artificially create demand for dollars as we go off the gold standard, which is an energy system. All metals are energy systems, ultimately. Precious metal systems. And they're like, we're going to go to, you know, get off the gold standard, which is like holding us down. Mm-hmm. And we're going to go into the, you know, the debased world of the petrodollar. But they were able to shovel inflationary effects from them printing money. You know, as kind of the stuff we were just talking about, the dollar was so demanded and needed by industrial nations, they needed to buy oil. Mm. So we like forced them to buy dollars first, which takes care of our demand problem. And so we can just print money and then they'd have, you know, have to buy oil. We've completely recreated that system in Bitcoin. In March 2020, when everything went down all at the same time, like that to me was like a moment where like I was, you know, following things and that happened and it was the COVID drop. And I immediately put every single thing that I owned into Bitcoin. Mm. And I was like, this is, and I called my dad and I was like, you need to fucking do you blah, 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 blah. And I was like, because this to me, I was like, I think the petrodollar system broke. Mm-hmm. And I think it broke in 2020. And we pulled out of Afghanistan. We're like, peace, Middle East. We don't even care.
Yeah.
Oil and energy prices and everything are going, you know, absolutely insane. 2020, it was like when that happened, it was about 2 months before May 2020, which was the halving, and which was the most important halving in that it was the first halving that brought relative supply issuance below their normal inflation rate of the US dollar.
Right. It cut it from around 4% to around 2%.
Yeah.
Was that right?
Yeah. And gold coming out of the ground, which is like 2.5%. So all of a sudden, Bitcoin overnight went from mathematically losing, you know, entropic purchasing power less than the US dollar and oil and gold. And so like 2 months before that mathematical event happens, this whole thing happened. So I was just like, okay, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I don't know what else the fuck is happening if it's not this. And now here we are a couple of years later and like 99% of like all Bitcoin trading is like all dollars. It's like all US dollar pairs. All anyone talks about is stable coins. Huh. A lot of people use stable coins over Bitcoin.
Yeah.
A lot of people are trying to push stable coins over Bitcoin. A lot of people are now trying to push about how getting people access to the dollar in other parts of the world where they don't have it is this like amazing entropic thing, philanthropic thing rather. And it's like, how did we get here?
It's just fascinating that like petrodollar, like replacement for petroleum is the Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And it's like, it kind of makes sense that like the dollar kind of needs some like real source of value.
Of course.
Right? To like prop everything
Bitcoin
up.
Bitcoin needs an exchange value.
Well, like, for now, until that's the standard, you know?
I mean,
so you think?
I don't know. I mean, will sats ever not be a pair to something?
The thing it depends on is it depends on how bad the U.S. government fucks up.
It does.
Yeah.
If the U.S. government doesn't fuck up and they keep inflation like under 10%, people,
it's over 10%.
No, but I mean, and under 10% for like a long period of time. If they don't let it get above 10% for long periods of time, sats may never become the standard.
Right.
The dollar might kind of be good enough. So luckily,
sats will become the standard then, because there's no way that they're going to keep it under 10% for a long time.
Because
are you saying, so like sats becoming the standard relies on the U.S. government?
Because yeah,
the U.S. currency sort of fucking up.
Yeah, because the dollar is like, everybody wants a stable unit of account and a stable medium of exchange. Like medium of exchange, I actually think is Bitcoin can take that earlier before unit of account. But yeah, they want a unit of count to like denominate things and like price the menus on and like, a dollar, it'll be a long time before a dollar inflating, even at 10% per year, is worse than sats, which are very volatile while we're in this phase of adoption.
Sure.
Yeah. But you don't think the government can keep inflation below 10%?
I mean, I think if we're so far cooked.
Yeah. Like, debt, right?
This is 2008. Like, we hyperinflated in 2008. We just were able to, like... Or like we broke the system. I mean, we broke it in 1971, but we really broke the system in 2008. And then we like did a thing where we just kind of shoved it under the rug. And then, you know, a few months later, Bitcoin comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And with, you know, and then what was I saying? No, but it's not that. I mean, I think the U.S. government did a lot better this year than I think a lot of people thought that they would. They've raised rates a bit. They've, like, the dollar's screamed up. Like, I think people were like, oh, you know, Bitcoin's going to be 300K and the, you know, dollar hyperinflating. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I think people thought that was going to happen in, like, 2021.
Right.
And that just very clearly didn't happen. But, like, they can't raise rates really much more than they have. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of people that disagree with me that I think are really smart. But, like, I've always was sort of, like, they'll probably raise rates to like 2 or 3%, maybe like 4. But like even once they get into like 5, like they're certainly not, we're not Volckering, like we're not going to have double digit interest rates, which is what we need. We need like 20% interest rates.
Mm.
We're not going to have that because instantly overnight, the compounding debt service, like what we owe on the 30 trilli, would be more than the GDP coming in, like the GDP growth of the country. So, I mean... We're a zombie company by every, like if you would never invest in the US dollar if it was like a stock.
Yeah. Right.
It's like, you'd be like, oh, it's like mathematically broken.
Mm.
But you think the US dollar is going to fuck everyone else over first.
Well, it's been doing that. Like there's like that like, not Bitcoin, dollar milkshake theory. Which is that
the I dollar drink will, your milkshake.
Yeah, so the dollar will drink.
I'm an oil man.
I have a straw. And you're on the other side of the room. But I agree with it like 100%, but only in the sense that it's a temporary action. Like, I think people are like, the dollar is going to eat everyone else's lunch and then like stay there and it's going to be like sick. And it's like, no, like it will eat everybody's lunch and then it will completely debase against itself, which is like what we're experiencing. You know, like I put in $20 the other day into my car and it didn't even turn off my fuel light. You know, like we're starting to get to that point where like cash, dollars, fiats, think maybe dollars are more okay than anything else, but like you can't buy energy, you can't buy food, you can't buy housing. That's always been kind of true. Education, like all the things you would actually have value for that you would actually need. Like sure, you can buy cheap TVs and computers and games and stuff. But that's always been deflationary.
Yeah, those goods are deflating. Yeah. Those are deflationary goods. And so the fact that they're not even cheaper than they are is bad.
Mm-hmm. But we're seeing, you know, what are we seeing, you know, 300, 400, 500% inflation in? It's like education, healthcare, like childcare, like all the things you actually want.
Highly regulated, by the way.
Yeah.
Very regulated. A lot of state interference in those markets.
You gotta let the market take care of the children.
Absolutely.
Listen, I mean, we have to face the reality that in a truly free society, there will be a flourishing free market in children. That's a Murray Rothbard quote. My favorite meme and cap.
Amazing. I'm a free market parent, you know? I let them go. I put them on the bus every day.
I sold my children into slavery.
The invisible hand can do whatever it wants.
tell me on the doll where the invisible hand touched you.
Oh my God.
Okay, Okay, we haven't even talked about Ethereum.
Let's talk about the merge, all right?
Yeah. Let's talk about the merge. I mean, I think it's a good transition because I think stablecoins and the dollar and regulation and the lack of free markets is a great segue into
In a way, I feel like what we just sort of talked about with the dollar, like, oh, it's going to eat everybody's lunch and it's kind of rip-roaring along and it's like looks like this like thing. Is kind of what's happening to Ethereum.
You're so right, yeah.
Yeah, that like Ethereum is like, in a lot of ways, it looks really good. Ton of MEV, of crazy DeFi Ponzi's. People love DeFi Ponzi's. Mm-hmm. Just going ham, going to do this thing, which maybe in the short term is going to be a really good idea. And it's going to help it, you know, narrative fight against other things. Like, oh, look, we're so green. We're using proof of stake. But in the long run, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not good.
No, totally. And I think a lot of these issues, like, I think a lot of these issues have been apparent for a long time. Mm. Like, I don't think I grokked it as hard as I have maybe like recently, but like this idea of like compounding governance to me was just like a very obvious, like fatal flaw of Ethereum.
What do you mean by compounding governance?
Just that like the people that have a stake will keep pace, if not more, by having, you know, 8% yield or whatever.
I just don't understand why people don't see that as like just truly recreating the worst parts of the current system.
I did, and then I got rid of all my ETH at 180.
I know, but then there's
some people do, but it's a very small minority. Like, you need to burp.
No, yeah. I was going to sneeze, but I think it passed. Go on.
Okay.
She's allergic to Ethereum, I think.
Every time I see a post on Reddit about the merge, like in like our Ethereum or whatever, our cryptocurrency, I kind of go and I search, like I go to the comments and I search decentralization and I see how far down it goes. And there's like one or two comments after like 50 highly upvoted comments that are like, hey guys, maybe this is bad for decentralization.
Yeah.
But it, and also like some people, like I think some people, I mean, I not to like name people by name, but maybe Alexander Wall, His initials are like A Wall.
Maybe.
Yeah. Anyways, he's like a sort of
Eric Wall.
Yeah, him.
Eric Wall. Yeah.
He
was that the one with the like anime girl profile picture?
Yeah. Erica Wall. His like female
Eric Wall.
Yeah.
I like Eric Wall.
Yeah, but he was like talking about how like we need to be ready to slash people.
Oh yeah, the censor state. Oh man.
And that is like that's crazy. Hilarious. To me. Like that. Yeah. That's like
it's insane.
That's like if like in Bitcoin if miners got super bad, or like there was a break in SHA-256, or if one company made a miner which was like 100 times more efficient than any other company and started dominating it, or anything like that.
Invented free energy.
Yeah. and they were the only ones who had free energy.
Right.
In that scenario, we would fork the proof of work to a different proof of work that they like didn't have an advantage in.
Totally.
But that would be a doomsday scenario. That's like a last ditch thing that you do when things have already gone super bad.
Oh yeah.
And so for people to be like on Ethereum, the equivalent of that on Ethereum is slashing people's stake. 100%. Is saying like some stakers who are behaving badly, we're just going to do a hard fork and take away your coins. Actually, I guess it could be a soft fork. That's crazy that they're like, no, this is part of the plan.
Yeah, let's set precedent for like, deleting users off.
We're getting a new car. And if things go wrong, the plan is we have a stick of dynamite in the glove box.
Yeah.
And we drive it off of a cliff and we light the dynamite and throw it in the car and jump out of the cliff and the car explodes like in the air and we jump into a new car in midair.
Yeah.
And we leave all the people we don't like in the car and they get blown up by the dynamite. And they're like, this is the plan, guys. We've written this down. We all need to know this. Like,
oh, and at the same time, they're arresting developers that wrote code that as it goes against sanctions. So you want someone to write this code that hasn't even been written yet to slash Coinbase, even though Coinbase is clearly, all of these spooks have clearly been in at the ICO level.
Yeah, these would be.
It's like, you're not slashing, you're slashing yourself.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are users' funds.
Yeah. How do they,
it's an exchange.
I don't understand. Like, I feel like Ethereum, I mean, we've talked about this before that like the big difference between Bitcoin people, well, not one difference between some Bitcoin people and some Ethereum people, is just having a lot less confidence. Bitcoin people have a lot less confidence in very complex things working.
Oh, okay. Right? I was like, Bitcoiners have way too much confidence in
complex, like Ethereum people will be like, no, like we have this problem, but we have this crazy mechanism that's going to fix it. No, we got like slashing and bonding and like weak subjectivity. And Bitcoiners are like, I think that might have some downsides.
Yeah.
Like, let's not do
that. Oh my God. Yeah.
And so, like, I think Ethereum people are just like, don't very over-optimistic about the trade-offs that they're making.
I need to sit down with Vitalik and do a debugging session.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of cults, charismatic leaders.
Vitalik has some demons that need to be
debugged. Charismatic leader.
I mean, in the, you know, that's what charisma is these days, is like, you know, I mean, look at Tom York and what, it's like faux autism, right? No, Vitalik's very autistic, obviously.
It's kind of true. Yeah.
Nothing faux about that.
Yeah. No. I've seen people say that online where they're like, he's faking it. And it's like, that guy's not faking it. Like, I think he's very, very, very smart. I just think he's probably naive to the point, or optimistic to the point of being, I'm not sure what's, I don't know if it's naivete or optimism. Yeah. And it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
Could be both.
I read an article where he was talking. I think he was being interviewed by No Opinion, who's a Twitter economist. Has some beliefs that I think are not correct.
Yeah.
Let's just leave it at that. But he was interviewing Vitalik, and Vitalik was talking about like what him being worried about Bitcoin. And just, he was like, there are these concerns with proof of stake, but I think they're going to be fine. And it's like, you really like, you think so?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I mean, I hate to ever, ever, ever bucket anyone as being a bad faith actor that I've never met or talked to. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there is a argument to be made that there are humongous bad faith actors in the Ethereum system.
Like who?
Yeah.
Joe Lubin.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I think
you know, like people from the get-go, like co-founders from the get-go, Charles Hoskinson, like
Gavin McWood. Didn't Charles Hoskinson do like Cardano?
Yeah. The other dude that I just said did.
I thought you were going to say something spicy, like Vitalik is a bad fake actor, which I kind of don't think so. But
I actually kind of don't think so with him either, because I think he's just like...
I think he's just naive and optimistic.
Yeah, and I think people sort of saw that like network idea, and I think that people were like, okay, this is probably going to be done, let's get in on the base layer and kind of do this and maybe set up a position where, you know, we can kind of corrupt the incentives from the get-go, which is like that's why I mean Joe Lubin is absolutely a bad faith actor in that before the ICO he came out and said this is how you escape AML laws and KYC laws to there are limits to how much you guys would be able to invest in this. Here's how you get around it. I mean, he very explicitly gave like banks and JP Morgan and these people that helped build, you know, some of this infrastructure and consensus, like, gave them the rules and how to do it, like very explicitly, like on recorded on video saying, you know, and like that is bad faith.
Yeah.
In my opinion. Yeah, I don't think anything necessarily that I haven't gotten maybe his criticisms on Bitcoin actually and his lack of criticisms on ETH. But
it's his baby.
Yeah.
He also did write the I Love Bitcoin Maximalism blog post, which I still haven't read, but people say is pretty good.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't know. People get like so, Bitcoiners get really, really, really emotional about Vitalik. Like, I don't think about him at all, really.
I don't even think about you, bro.
I mean, I don't. It's like, I don't think about ETH. Like, I really don't. It's just like, I've had to recently because it's too important not to.
Mm.
And that's why I just like hate that Bitcoiners don't want to talk about it or don't want to learn from this because there's just too much to learn. And a lot of it is like, oh, wow, Bitcoiners did so much right.
Mm. We should really be like, there should be a like documenting. I mean, I think Ethereum will go through some really chaotic shit. Like, I think that there's going to be a kind of hard censorship that's going to come to Ethereum that
it's already here.
Not going to be able to resist. Yeah, I mean, I would say it's not even quite here yet, like in the sense that, like, you can still go use Tornado Cash if you have your own node and you have your own front end. Like, I mean,
of course,
like,
you'll always be able to.
No, but what I mean is that, like, post-merge, there's going to be hard censorship on transactions and you won't even be able to use it even if you have your own full node. That. You know, and we can like the MEV thing is crazy because
awesome.
Like MEV stands for minor extractable value. And so the way that this works is like, let's say you do like a Uniswap transaction where you like buy a bunch of USD and you trade it for Bitcoin, or you sell USDC for Bitcoin or whatever. Somebody can see your transaction ahead of time and I guess buy a bunch of Bitcoin before you.
Front run your trade.
And then you sort of make less money on the trade, or you do it at a worse price, and they're able to make a profit. And the people who are in the best position to do this are miners, because miners see all the transactions and miners can order the transactions in a block. They can decide which order transactions go in.
Yeah.
And getting in like a sort of MEV, a value extracting transaction in a certain place in the block, that's what you have to do it.
Right.
So miners, one, this is like huge centralization pressure on miners.
Huge.
But another is they use this thing called flashbots. Do you know about this? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my understanding is that right now, if you are trying to extract MEV, you can like figure out how to do it, and then you can submit it to the like Flashbots API. You can be like, I want to get this transaction in this block. And then miners can get like a chunk of transactions from the Flashbots thing that are people are paying like very high fees to get these transactions, and they can include them in the block. And so the miners get the value from MEV, but they're sort of outsourcing, like finding the MEV opportunities.
Right.
My understanding is that right now you can take a chunk of these Flashbots transactions and you can put other transactions, maybe not before, maybe after in the block or before, I don't know, but you get some like flexibility. My understanding is that post-merge, you have to take the whole thing.
Yep.
You have to take the whole template. You have to include it in your block. And so now miners who are already even more centralized are giving up their choice of what transactions they include in the block to Flashbots, which is a fully centralized, like there is a single, there's a computer on the internet that's deciding right. what goes in those transactions.
Which will send, which is a centralizing thing because it's like a skill to create, you know, to find the value in it. Whereas like,
yep.
if we created a Bitcoin mining pool,
yep.
we would literally create the same candidate block.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no way to reorder transactions in a Bitcoin yeah. block, but transactions are valid or not valid. And right. they're,
that's it.
That's it.
Yeah.
yeah.
Like
yeah.
they're spent or unspent. Yeah. That's it.
The other reason it's centralizing, it's not just about skill, but it's about, there's a marketplace where MEV, like people hunting for MEV are like bidding against each other
yeah.
to get into a block. And that's also centralizing
yeah.
because if you're a miner, you want to be on the one
which
biggest.
Which is Lido. It's which about 30%. Yeah.
Is Lido. So I don't understand. What's the relationship between Lido and Flashbots? Oh, I think it's Lido.
Oh, maybe.
It's I don't
Lido.
Know.
L-I-D-O.
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly that. But yeah, there's like 9 pools that have like 75% or 70% of you know, validation,
mm-hmm.
and Lido is like, or Lido is like 30% of it. It's like almost half.
Right.
So this stuff like MEV and this Flashbot thing will
yeah.
just continually like yeah. you would never want to go to another pool.
Yeah.
A, because the code doesn't exist yet to even be able to do it. You can't take your stuff out of a pool. But also, like, why would you ever leave a pool that was making more money than all the other pools
right.
and will continue to make more money than all the other pools?
That's the thing, is that, like, once a Bitcoin mine is like some like minimum size, it's going to make as much as the other Bitcoin mines. There isn't sort of increasing returns to more
right.
centralization.
Mm.
But with MEV, like there are sort of increasing returns to centralization, like
yeah.
doing MEV better.
And it kind of gives you the ability to censor in a different way, actually. Like you can kind of get away with unprofitably censoring something because it's now profitable. Whereas like in Bitcoin, mm. if you're not including transactions because you're censoring them, it's like they'll just get in the next block. Like even mm. if there was 51% of the hash rate was like owned by a group and they were censoring, and you would just wait 10 minutes or 20 minutes instead of mm. 10. Like you would get in a block.
Yeah.
Obviously, we don't want 51% yeah. hash owned by anybody.
And the MEV is crazy. I mean, the MEV
yeah.
is way more than fees. Like it's
yeah.
just like, because they're just taking like, all of DeFi are open markets where all of these transactions are happening in the open
yeah.
by like market participants, and
yeah.
every miner can front run every
yeah.
transaction.
Yeah.
And that's what they're doing.
And blocks are every minute?
Yeah, something like that. I believe so. They're not in, maybe they're even every, they're not every 10 seconds.
No.
Are
no,
you
no.
sure? They might be every 10 seconds. I'm not sure.
No.
Okay. Don't
quote
us on that.
How could you even think about that? Like, how could you MEV in 10 seconds? Is that even possible? I mean, a minute is already insane.
No, I think it's. I think you just analyzed transactions. But let's call it a minute because that's
yeah,
probably it. But
I thought it was a minute.
But I mean, you can instantly analyze the transactions for MEV opportunities. Like I follow this one guy on Twitter that is like one of the main developers writing MEV hunting for strategies. Yeah, I think his name is Edgar or something.
Mm.
Seems like a good guy. And he's just like, yeah, he just writes these like crazy algorithms that run automatically that
yeah.
identify MEV opportunities. Like you just see a certain kind of interaction with a DeFi exchange, and you just put two transactions, you just sandwich it in, you like it, it's the shit sandwich, but it's like shit bread shit, shit on both sides. And then you extract like all of the alpha from that transaction.
It's fucking crazy.
My intuition with just sort of the Ethereum culture in general is kind of like the same story that I feel like plays out with like every big tech company, where there's like this initial like push or idea that, you know, we're going to disrupt and change the world and it's going to be amazing. We're going to DeFi, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then like over time, I don't know if people become jaded or like if they're naive or just like people are blinded by money or whatever, but like slowly it becomes just easier to kind of like conform to whatever demand is already being like assigned to you, like the ESG narrative, like, oh, it's bad to use this much energy for proof of work, so we need to go to proof of stake if we want to like proceed in this world in, in a way that's like, you know, in line with what the government wants, with what society wants, with whatever.
Yeah.
And slowly you kind of like lose sight of what you were initially trying to do at all. And you just sort of become this like machine that works for whoever is the highest power. So like Facebook will kick Trump off. Twitter will kick Trump off if whoever is in power tells them to do that. Mm-hmm. Ethereum, it just seems to me it's kind of going in the same direction where like they're really more than happy to just kind of comply to whatever government or whoever demand like comes to them, as long as they can kind of just keep making money and pumping their own bags.
Totally. Yeah. And I would say even more so, it's like Ethereum has a threat of state capture because of the weight of the reserve assets on the chain no longer being native to the chain.
Right.
Yeah.
And like, like that's the cool thing about Bitcoin. It's like, there's probably like forks like we've never even like thought of that we our keys could access, you know, that we've never put.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Bitcoin Cash, into. Bitcoin Oil, Bitcoin Africa.
Diamond, gold.
Yeah. Like you weren't around for the block size wars, but like after.
I wasn't born yet.
Yeah. Block size wars. But like, yeah, there was this period where everybody's like, oh, we can just fork Bitcoin. And, and it was like you would get these airdrops of like shitty coins that your keys from your wallet, if you like put your keys. Yeah. And it was like, it was a mess. I mean, I remember I had to move my coins on Bitcoin using some sort of like anti-replay protection thing so that I could like dump my Bitcoin Cash. I don't even remember if I bothered to dump my Bitcoin SV. Like,
no, I definitely didn't.
Yeah.
No.
Love to hear dad's stories about the war.
Dad's stories about the war. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't even, yeah, I don't even remember what I did. I don't even know.
Back in my
even I don't even know. If I'm not even sure if I was self-custodying when the fork happened. Yeah. Like I might not have. I mean, it was, cause that was like fall of 2017, maybe early, late summer.
Yeah, man, how?
Like maybe I was, but I'm not sure.
Coinbase has gone so far down the fucking tubes.
GDAX,
like,
baby.
Coinbase used to, they used to just have Bitcoin and like maybe like Litecoin or something.
I remember when GDAX listed Litecoin and Ethereum.
Yeah.
It was that same time, at the same time.
And now it's just like shitcoin, it's fucking carnival.
Kraken too, man. Yeah. It's like, dude, Kraken used to be cool because they actually did like Monero and that was sweet and at least like an interesting like...
Yeah, is Kraken shitcoiny now?
Dude, it's like...
It's like, yeah.
I get like an email and it's like Shibu Inu, and it's like not even Shibu Inu. It's like a fork of this thing and it's just like, how are we here? And then you got base fucking Jesse, who I love, who's great. And I've talked to him before and just... I think great.
It's too much money for these companies to ignore.
100%.
Just trade this like just dog shit.
100%. And there's this, I think he had a quote where he was like, I think this is a quote, like a list is not an endorsement. And it's like, yes, it is.
I think it's
100% an endorsement.
I've heard that people at like some companies have been like, oh, like we'll let the market decide.
Yeah.
And like, I'm a free market dude.
Me too.
But if I know that something is bad,
yes,
I still think it's immoral to sell it.
100%.
It's not a free market. Sorry. We're talking about the free market next episode, so I'll save it. But I just think that's the way of corporations. Like,
That's what they're going to do.
Yeah.
And like, Ethereum and many shit coins, all of them, they just behave exactly like corporations.
It's
creating the same shit that I feel like... I like Bitcoin because it's attempting to escape from.
Yeah, whereas everything else is like same shit, new... Wait, a joke.
Oh, sorry.
Same shit, new butt. It's just a different butt that's shitting out the same shit.
Yeah, that's a crypto dick butt NFT.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's just... Yeah, I don't understand... I mean, I guess I do understand because a lot of people don't get into like crypto or Bitcoin or whatever because they like have a sort of like, I guess like it's a leftist idea, like to try to like move away from like corporate rule of everything.
Yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't have to be, but it just kind of seems like that's more on the left than on the right. But like, I don't know. To me, it's like if you're anti-corporate, which I just am, and I feel like many people are. You can't be into shit coins and you can't be, know, and
I agree.
I guess it's just, I don't know. I sort of like naively assumed that people in crypto were interested in like changing the world in some interesting and fundamental way. And they're not, they just want to make money.
Yeah. And I think that like, we really probably don't really accurately understand the composition of people out there. Mm-hmm. I think there's probably like 0.1% of people who are like as informed as we are, frankly. Right, like
one percent.
Well, no, I like maybe like for just kind of knowing what's going on and have and knowing a little bit about like centralization and decentralization and like how Bitcoin works. Like on that level, like maybe like 0.1%.
Yeah,
and then there's like the 10% who have like a really fuzzy idea, like they've heard of like you know a hash function. And then there's like,
that's less than the, but go on.
Yeah. But it drops off really quick. And then there's this huge volume of people who are like, oh, this is like a shinier Ameritrade account, you know, and
they have
no idea, absolutely no clue. And these are the people
that's
who
the
are like,
that's the feature of Bitcoin though, I think.
Well, yeah, the fortunate,
logical normies.
Fortunate thing is I think Bitcoin can resist those people. Like, come on, come party. Let's go.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Buy some Bitcoin, like pump the price. Like, great. Because it can't be like really corrupted.
Co-opted by those. Yeah.
It has a much smaller attack vector for centralizing forces.
Yeah.
But they definitely exist.
Yeah, for sure.
Like 100%. Like, hey, give me all your Bitcoin and I'll give you 8% yield on USDC.
Yeah.
Like that's a bad faith actor or like maybe not bad faith actor, but it's certainly a perverse business model that is getting you to do bad self-custody for dollars. They could start, you know, paying miners, you know, basically like subsidize miners that are unprofitable to censor people with dollars. There's tons of things they can do. They can fuck with block space with, you know, theoretically.
And also just like we need to be very careful as we develop and improve Bitcoin that we don't, that we continue to maintain its very high efficiency and its very high decentralization. Yeah. And those are things that are not like a given. And also like non-obvious things, like for example, like syncing a Bitcoin full node is very fast.
Yeah.
You can, on a reasonable computer, you can do it, I think, in about a day if you have a good connection, maybe a couple days. And this is...
It's probably like 2 days now, probably. Okay. Yeah.
Yep. And, but this is because of insane amounts of work that's gone into making sure that IBD, initial block download, initial sync is fast. And
I actually just heard that phrase, the IBD the other day, and I'm like, I kind of want to use it for something, but I don't know.
It's
like maybe like a beginner.
It's
like
a little too close to irritable bowel.
I know it is. It is. I know. But I want, we're going to do a thing in the next magazine where we have like headlines kind of at the beginning. And I was thinking, I was like, oh, maybe like... the initial block download would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Catching you up on like the stories of the thing. Yeah. We are doing it, but we're not calling it that.
Uh-huh.
But I was like, oh, that would be cool.
Yeah,
and then I thought about the irritable bowel.
Yeah.
And I was like, not cute.
No.
You know? Less cute.
But we have to not take these things like for granted, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
And like other things like, I mean, like, you know, I had a friend who was saying like, why are developers worrying about initial block download? Like it's a waste of time. And it's like, no, that's what keeps... people running nodes, that's what keeps running nodes accessible. That's what keeps people who download Bitcoin and start running it from, like, they're marginal users who, if it's too slow, they're just going to close it and never open it again.
Totally.
But then if it's a little faster, they're going to keep it open and they're going to run a full node. Yeah. My, like, somebody said, like, you know, like, was joking that Ordinals was just a Trojan horse to get NFT degens to run Bitcoin Core. Because you need to run Bitcoin Core to use the Ord like wallet and index. And I'm like, you're not wrong.
Yeah. No, I mean, dude, incentive structures are like endless and they can be yeah, you want to do cool art, and then now all of a sudden, oh shit, I'm I guess I'm validating.
Yeah, I guess I'm validating my own blocks.
Yeah, I guess. Like, cool.
Which you couldn't do that on Ethereum.
Fuck no.
If you released,
it's about to be impossible.
If you were like, I have a project that I want to do on Ethereum, and the users are required to run their own Ethereum full node.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So much bandwidth. Yeah. Just like absolute insanity.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's some interesting, like, I do think that there's some things to discuss about like how actually decentralized Bitcoin mining can be.
Mm.
And like, I think, you know, there's like this, there was a Poulin went insolvent.
Yeah.
Today.
News
potentially.
Item. News item. Yeah. Poulin
news
insolvent.
Item.
Yeah.
And like a big issue with that is
did
like,
did they just borrow too much during the bull and now they're getting the horns and the bear?
I mean,
bears don't
they
have
also,
horns, but,
they,
you
know, they,
the claws, you got the claws in the bear market.
You know those pastries, those bear horns? Those are my favorite.
The bear horns? Yeah.
But I think that they were maybe doing some ETH stuff or some other, I think they do some multi-chain mining and some other things. But yeah, I mean, hash price is like 8 cents. I mean, things are bad in the mining world.
Yeah.
But like the big issue,
man,
really,
God bless miners. Just these like degenerate wildcatters. Like we need them.
I have some really like beloved people in my Bitcoin circle that are like super degen miners.
Yeah.
And I love them.
Love
but
them.
It's like,
love
dude,
them.
Like
they're the real capitalists.
I want anything more. True. Like I want miners to make all like home miners to make all the money in the world.
Yeah.
I just don't know how it's going to happen. And I'm a little like, I think the pooling thing is interesting because it brings up a lot of, and the MEV stuff is interesting because it brings up the two biggest things I kind of think facing mining, which is, you know, block candidate decentralization, which is sort of the Stratum concept. And then how do you, you know, trustlessly and privately distribute pooling rewards in a way that doesn't just automatically reveal very clearly that you're mining.
There's also transaction selection. Do you know about Stratum V2?
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Stratum V2. So right now,
candidate block construction.
Yeah, the pool selects the transaction currently with Stratum V1. With Stratum V2, each individual contributor to the pool select transaction. So then the pool can no longer censor, which is cool.
Yeah.
This is a big, important improvement.
Yeah, 1,000%.
It's coming down the pipe.
Yeah. Humongous.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's coming.
One last bit about mining centralization is there's kind of two, like if you look at what is changing mining decentralization, I'd say that there are two factors that one is making mining more decentralized.
Yeah.
And one is making mining less decentralized. The factor that's making mining more decentralized is the fact that mining chips like ASICs, when ASICs were first produced, they weren't close to the state of the art of what we could do with microchips, right? They were very primitive. They weren't like on the best process node, which is like the smallest feature size. So they weren't on, you know, the, you know, 10 nanometer or whatever we were at that time. They were like really clunky. They weren't very well designed. And like, they're starting to get close to the state of the art. And
100%.
So once they get close to the state of the art, then they're not subject to improvements like using better technology.
Totally.
Now they're subject to the very slow improvements of like, well, how are we improving like CPUs in general? Like how fast?
Moore's Law sort of.
Exactly. Yeah. Now it's the very slow, like, okay, getting better, more efficient chips.
Totally.
And that's a much slower thing.
Totally.
And that's making mining more decentralized.
100%.
Because it means that old machines don't wear out as quickly.
Exactly.
Yeah, they can stay viable.
S9s are like, I don't know, probably like 20% of the hash rate of the maybe?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe
I'm wrong. But like, like they're still used like a lot.
Yeah, and that was in the early days, if you had a miner or some device from like
a year ago,
it was toast.
Yeah.
So that means that there's more access to machines. They don't go out of date. You don't need an insider at an ASIC company to like even get a shipment.
I had a random, I was just like sat next to a guy at a bar in Miami and had dinner, and he was one of the guys on the mining console, and we like talked for a while, and he was like, I have like 30,000 like S9s that I get 0 kilowatt hour from my government.
And
I just,
he's
like, I'm pretty sure I'm the only one on the mining council with a zero, you know, mining, you know, he's like, I just got to pay off the Navy for them to like, you know, drop off the ASICs, you know, obviously not in the States. It was like pretty ridiculous, but I was just like, oh wow. I didn't really realize like yeah, S9s are like a formidable
yeah.
part of the, you know, yeah. And yeah, 100%. That's really interesting. But and so, but the centralization,
then
point,
the,
yeah.
Then the second factor I think is, the increasing, sophistication of mining, Bitcoin mine, heating, cooling, repairing. Yep. You're seeing battery. Things like, yeah, you're seeing things like immersion cooled, Bitcoin mining, where you actually take like a board that doesn't have any fans on it,
yeah.
and you just immerse it in this like distillate.
Mineral oil, yeah.
It's like mineral oil, yeah, that cools it. And that is a centralizing factor because it means that you have to have a higher level of capital to compete efficiently.
Totally.
I actually kind of think that maybe that will be kind of moderate because I don't think that scales up that high. I think you'll always be able to have like a small building and put the things in it that you need to mine successfully. And maybe to be a really efficient miner, you need to have like a building and be some level of like professionalism. But I don't think that's going to be as much of a factor because if you can find some cheap electricity,
it's all about the price of electricity.
Right.
Like all of the, I think the mining technology discussion and all of that really just comes
and
down
to
And
we want it to be the price of electricity. That's what we want mining to come down to because 100%. Also mining is, electricity is like, doesn't have crazy economies of scale, right? You get up to like the size of a nuclear power plant and like, that's it. You don't get more efficient by scaling up and that keeps it decentralized.
Because you can only send AC like, 2,000 miles or something.
Right.
Like, and if you store it in a battery, you know, it's going to leak.
Yep.
So yeah, we can't just, I don't know. I think it's going to be really interesting. The future of energy, like we're all about, like literally today as we, you know, maybe an hour before we started filming, like the state of California announced an emergency.
Yeah.
State of emergency on the grid.
Simultaneously.
Blackouts.
Yeah. Things. Simultaneously saying that like, oh, by the way, we are going all electric.
Yeah.
In some
2035, you can't buy a gas car.
What
if there's an earthquake and none of us can charge our cars and leave?
These people are fucking idiots.
It's literally insane.
These people are fucking idiots. They're real morons.
This is where
and
I get
you
to
know
the point.
Why? Democracy.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
That's a great question of whether it's good faith acting or not. Like, where is this stuff coming from?
Right.
Yeah.
And like, it's so crazy. Like, yeah. like that. Oh,
is it
all
good
electric
intentions
and
going
we're
wrong, or is it
like the
bad
grid is
intentions.
Dying. Also.
Yeah.
No.
And also, the grid is powered by fucking CO2 and coal anyway. Yeah. Or not CO2, but you know, coal anyway. So. Why are EVs necessarily even better?
Yeah.
I love EVs for torque and stuff. Like EVs are sick. Like they're great.
Yeah.
But I think there is something to be said about having accessibility.
It's nice that torque is kind of similar to the word twerk because torque is kind of like a car twerking, you know?
You're really onto something there.
Yeah.
Give this man $1 billion. Yeah, no. The future of mining is really interesting, and I will say, you know, and sort of kind of wrapping it up ish, sort of like this.
Aaron's nervously shuffling the paper. Guys, we're not gonna get good numbers on the YouTube if we don't shut up soon.
All I was gonna say is I've been bearish for the entire time I've known you, and most of the time I've known you, if not maybe the whole time I've known you,
mm-hmm.
and everyone was generally not that bearish, and now everyone's super bearish, and I would say that everything that we are talking about here, everything that we have seeing in the world with energy, this is Bitcoin's moment.
Yeah.
just is.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry,
sucks that it had to be this way.
It sucks that we're all poor today and that people are going to go through a very difficult time. That's absolutely true. It's going to be hard. And that's why I think, I am a free market person. I don't care about politics. I want to forget about all that stuff. But also, I'm not a sociopath and I love people.
Yeah.
And if we don't have political discussions, social discussions, we don't figure out what to do with... Like, we can use fiat as a way to not have everybody die. When we go to Bitcoin standard, you know how many millions of people are going to starve to death in the next couple years or freeze to death if we don't have political solutions. So we need discourse. We need political solutions. We need tooling. And also fuck the state and all these people. But those discussions need to be had as people.
Yeah.
So we don't let our community, fall behind, So this is Bitcoin's moment, even though it's we're about to go through something crazy.
Yeah.
But I think at the end of it, this is Bitcoin's moment.
Yeah.
I agree.
I feel like maybe we should just wrap it there.
I know. I kind of think so, too.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
Yeah. That was great. Yeah. Making me feel optimistic and also a little scared at the same time.
I love that feeling. I love that.
See you at 12K.
Mark, thank you so much. I love your mind. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Yeah.
Sure, we'll have you back on at some point. This episode will drop in time for the Ethereum merge, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
Anything else to shill or talk about? Casey, live coding ordinals?
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to experiment where I live code on Twitter every day at 10 a.m. So come watch me code.
To make you wake up.
Is that 10 a.m. PST?
Yeah, 10 a.m. Pacific time. That's right. Yep.
I have to spell it.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. There we go. Yeah. Billy McDo.
Yeah.
Who is also my co-organizer for the SF Bitcoin Devs meetup.
Yes.
Yep.
Thank you guys so much for having me on. It's been an absolute pleasure. How Money is definitely one of my favorite things coming out. I love both of your minds. This is awesome. Keep doing it. And thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Thank you, Mark.
Awesome.
Catch you next time.
Later, bye. Everybody.